Nahum chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. Woe to the bloody city, all full of lies and plunder, no end to the prey. The crack of the whip and the rumble of the wheel, galloping horse and bounding chariot, horsemen charging, flashing sword and glittering spear, hosts of slain, heaps of corpses, dead bodies without end. They stumble over the bodies. And all for the countless whorings of the prostitute, graceful and of deadly charms, who betrays nations with her whoring and peoples with her charms. Behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and will lift up your skirts over your face, and I will make nations look at your nakedness and kingdoms at your shame. I will throw filth at you and treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. And all who look at you will shrink from you and say, wasted is Nineveh. Who will grieve for her? Where shall I seek comforters for you? Are you better than Thebes, that sat by the Nile with waters around her, her rampart a sea, and water her wall? Cush was her strength, Egypt too, and that without limit. Put and Libyans were her helpers. Yet she became an exile. She went into captivity. Her infants were dashed in pieces at the head of every street. For her honored men, lots were cast, and all her great men were bound in chains. You also will be drunken. You will go into hiding. You will seek a refuge from the enemy. All your fortresses are like fig trees with first ripe figs. If shaken, they fall into the mouth of the eater. Behold, your troops are women in your midst. The gates of your land are wide open to your enemies. Fire has devoured your bars. Draw water for the siege. Strengthen your forts. Go into the clay. Tread the mortar. Take hold of the brick mold. There will the fire devour you. The sword will cut you off. It will devour you like the locust. Multiply yourselves like the locust. Multiply like the grasshopper. You increased your merchants more than the stars of heavens. The locust spreads its wings and flies away. Your princes are like grasshoppers, your scribes like clouds of locusts, settling on the fences in a day of cold. When the sun rises, they fly away. No one knows where they are. Your shepherds are asleep, O king of Assyria. Your nobles slumber. Your people are scattered on the mountains with none to gather them. There is no easing your hurt. Your wound is grievous. All who hear the news about you clap their hands over you. For upon whom has not come your unceasing evil? We come this evening to the final woe pronounced by God over Nineveh, over the Assyrians. We come after these previous two chapters of this final picture painted by God's servant Nahum to the dismay of those who were once proud and to the encouragement of those who for the last several decades have been under the thumb of this enemy, Assyria. So this evening, as we look at this, we are going to look at three things. First of all, how it is that God is going to expose Nineveh to shame, as we look at these first seven verses of our passage this evening. Secondly, we will see that our Lord uses even taunting in his dealings with this once proud group of people. And we'll look at the three ways in which he taunted this once great and proud, yet disobedient and evil nation. And thirdly, as we come to the end of our passage this evening, we'll be looking at what might strike us as an unusual eulogy, an unusual or uncommon eulogy. So let's look here this evening at this beginning of our passage of chapter 3, the first seven verses. As God addresses Nineveh, he is addressing a once proud nation who thought themselves economically secure, that thought themselves militarily without challenge, who saw themselves to have no equal amongst their neighbors. In fact, they had brought many of their neighbors under their thumb and had enriched themselves greatly through the tribute that was given by all of those nations, those that they had conquered, and those whereby the ministry of their ministers, those who would go in the name of the king and make agreements with these nations, procured tribute, leaving many nations around them greatly impoverished and in danger. And so here, as Nahum begins this third chapter, as he gives out again another woe from the Lord, he notes the things of note about Nineveh. He says they are a bloody city, a city full of lies and plunder with no end to their prey. These were the things that Assyria was known for. These were the things that had risen to the level of notice to God. Their lies. And you recall last week we mentioned the example of the king of Assyria sending his mouthpiece, the Rabshakeh, to Jerusalem and there taunting God's people, seeking to undermine their faith in that God who had shown himself repeatedly faithful. Those were lies breathed out by the Rabshakeh. And so God is calling them out on their lies, is telling them what they really are, what they're really comprised of. These things that stand as the measure of their worth and also stand as the charges that God is bringing against that rebellious nation. Their lies, their plundering, their shedding of innocent blood, all of these things have come to the attention of God, and he now has come to act. We see here Nahum paints a picture of the coming demise. Those sounds that would have once been a comfort to those of Nineveh as they would hear the rumbling of the chariots, as they would hear the marching of the feet of their armies, the whips driving their horses, now are the very sounds of their terror, as they represent the coming of those whom God has appointed to overcome this once great nation, to humble them and to bring them to an end. Now we see the picture of war. Horsemen charging, flashing swords, glittering spears, a host of slain, heaps of corpses, dead bodies without end. They stumble over the bodies. What a picture of the destruction that is now before this once great city. You see, they had been warned of this before in the days of Jonah, of the coming of this wrath of God for their sins. Now we see Nahum picturing this end for us and describing for us why this has befallen this nation that once seemed to have no equal in all the earth. It is by likening the Assyrians to a prostitute. For all of the countless whorings of the prostitute, these things have befallen. These things have finally come to pass. And as God describes this whoring after the things of the world and after the other gods. We're reminded of how these calamities came about. That prostitute, that one that is to be attractive to look at, has what are described here as deadly charms. And certainly that is what the Assyrians had been likened to and are likened to here by God. By using their cunning, whether militarily or economically, through their negotiations for tribute, they had sought to entice. And we saw that when the Rabshakeh came to the walls of Jerusalem. Do you remember what he called out to those who sat upon the wall that they might anticipate would be their inheritance if they would disregard the king and his continually pointing them back to God and would turn themselves over to the king of Assyria? He said, "It'll be just like this land that you occupy now, where each one of you will sit under your own tree and will pick from your own vine," a land that they would seek to entice away from God, those by these charms. So these things are in the mind of God as he here describes this coming destruction. You see, this one who has such deadly charms betrays the nations, is deceitful, has nothing of lasting value. And as he is describing Assyria, we are reminded of this being the end of all sinful temptations. Sin makes all sorts of promises, tries to allure us with an easier way. And yet, when we engage in sin, what do we find but that the promises that are made ring hollow, are unsatisfying, do not yield what was promised, and leave us ultimately in a much worse place than we had been at the outset. This is the picture given by God of that once great nation of Assyria, that once proud nation, now has to contend with the fact that she has come up against the Almighty God. "Behold," he says, "I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will lift up your skirts over your face. I will make nations look at your nakedness." God is going to take away all of those coverings, all of those things in which Assyria had placed her hope and her trust, knew her security, that she may be made a spectacle before the world. As he talks of this kind of nakedness and the shame that ensues, our minds go back to Genesis chapter 3, to the fall of mankind. What was the immediate outcome of Eve taking hold of that fruit and giving some to her husband and them eating in disobedience to God? But all of a sudden they were made aware of their nakedness. They were filled with shame. And they sought to hide themselves first in their own created coverings. And then when they heard the approach of God, they hid themselves from him. These things wouldn't have been lost to God's people. They would have remembered that shame. And here is God preparing to bring such shame upon those who continued in their rebellion against him. He says, "The kingdoms, the nations shall look at your nakedness, the kingdoms at your shame. I will throw filth at you and treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. And all who look at you will shrink from you and say, 'Wasted is Nineveh. Who will grieve for her?'" You see, Nineveh had enjoyed such a place of prominence that the nations around her, many of them, wished to be like her. At the very least, they wished to have many of the things that she enjoyed. And yet, if those things weren't founded upon and in God Himself. They were seeking after foolish things. We live in a day and age where there are many nations of the world who would aspire to have what we have. And yet, unless Christ is at the center of all of those things, the things that we have do us no good either. And the things that the world would aspire for, if it isn't the Lord Jesus Christ, has no lasting value. In fact, they'll find themselves contending with many of the same sins, many of the same temptations that we are increasingly faced with, and sadly, not standing up against, nor seeking the escape that Christ provides. Given over to their sin, given over to the lust of the desires of this age. Next, he moves on to the next section of our passage this evening. I mentioned that God taunts this once proud people. He begins by first calling upon them to evaluate themselves. Are you of greater worth? Are you better than Thebes? Assyria knew Thebes well. Thebes was a city that was on the southernmost border of Egypt. And thus, it was thought a very secure location. And yet Assyria, when Egypt had grown so confident in their own strength and stopped sending tribute to Assyria, Assyria marched its armies down to this great city of Thebes and destroyed it. Utterly decimated the city of Thebes. Thebes thought itself secure by its location, thought itself secure because of the alliances it had with its neighbors, and those are mentioned here within our passage. Cush and Put and the Libyans, all were her helpers, and yet none were sufficient to keep her from the coming of exile. That once proud city, that once prosperous city, was brought low, and her treasures were plundered. She became an exile. She went into captivity. Her infants were dashed in pieces at the head of every street. For her honored men, lots were cast. As God asked this question, then he supplies a description of that city they knew well, that they had plundered, that they might understand their end will be like that of Thebes. Their destruction will be just as great. Their treasured children will be killed, and their men would be sold into slavery and taken away in chains. God taunts them because they think themselves without equal. God taunts them that they might realize the significance of these woes that he has brought against them, that they might realize this one who addresses them knows their history as he knows the complete history of all of his creatures. He next moves into his next taunt. He taunts Assyria's military might. He says, "All of your fortresses are like fig trees." This once proud, militarily mighty nation had incomparable fortresses. I've described again and again to you the walls of Nineveh. But its fortresses were well fortified. They thought themselves safe within from the oncoming armies. And here is God likening these great stone structures as being nothing more than fig trees, ripe first fig trees. I remember a while back watching a show on, I think it was Inventions or other things, where they show the various harvesting techniques that are used in orchards where there are fruit trees. And they bring forth this tractor, and it's got these jaws at the front of the tractor that come around the root of the tree, and then a net that is extended around that mouth or that arm. And then the tree is shaken by that tractor. And you see them make quick work All of that precious fruit, all of those nuts, all of those things that once occupied the boughs of that tree now are held firmly within those nets at the base of the tree. That's the picture that God is painting of these mighty fortresses of the Assyrians. And when God comes and carries out this, his judgment against them, those things they once thought stood proudly and without equal would drop all that they had and be easily overcome. He says, if they are shaken, they fall into the mouth of the eater. On top of that, they were renowned for their troops, their military might. Their soldiers were committed. They walked in step. They were disciplined. And yet God says of the armies of Assyria, he likens them to women. You see, they once thought themselves mighty. And here he says their strength has left them. No longer do they have the will to fight. And we see that in the description of the battle that comes as they are scattered, as they fly away. Lastly, he talks about their economic collapse. In verses 15 through 17, there will the fire devour you, the sword will cut you off, it will devour you like the locusts. Multiply yourselves like the locusts. This is him taunting, saying, if you want to be equal to and more mighty than, multiply yourselves. Make yourself numerous. He says, the only thing you've made numerous have been your merchants. Out of your desire to enrich yourselves, to plunder those around you. And yet he says of those things that had been multiplied, they will fly away. You see, Nineveh was a glorious city. It had much wealth within it. And yet all of those things that were the evidence of their plundering hand over their neighbors, all of those things that were the gifts of tribute given to them by their neighbors, would be taken from them. Their riches wouldn't save them. Their strongholds wouldn't save them. Their military couldn't save them. So great is the coming of the judgment of the Lord. And after he has addressed them, after he has described even those who serve the king, the princes and the scribes, they have fled. And then I mentioned we come to an unusual eulogy. Usually when we go to funerals, what is it that we expect to be said about that one who has recently died? A eulogy is typically comprised of those things that recall the best elements of a particular person. We tend to dwell on those things. Why? Because we're seeking for the comfort of those who are in the hearing. We're acknowledging, perhaps, especially with a believer, the many ways that we maybe saw evidence of God being pleased to use them. Well, the eulogy we find here for the king of Assyria is nothing like that. What is it that is here kept within this particular eulogy? A king is charged with the provision and protection of his people, is he not? That's his purpose for being. What is the oath that is taken by our president when he takes that office? To uphold the Constitution, to protect the nation and those of the nation. And yet we see here a very different picture recorded of the king. Here the charge is laid by God against the king as he says, your shepherds are asleep. Those whom you have entrusted to care for, protect the sheep, are sleeping. There isn't much value in a shepherd that sleeps. His whole point of being is to be alert to the possibility of the oncoming dangers and threats, to ensure that those that he is charged to keep don't wander off. A sleeping shepherd cannot do that. And so here he says, your shepherds are asleep, O king of Assyria. Your nobles slumber. And as a result, your people are scattered on the mountains with none to gather them. As he addresses the king here at the final portion of chapter 3, we see that the end of the king is near. We see that his death is imminent. He says to him in verse 19, "There is no easing of your hurt, for your wound is grievous." And usually when we think in terms of eulogies, we expect that those who are gathered to hear of the day that one passes would be filled with mourning, would be saddened at the loss. And yet here we see that God says, those who hear of your demise, those now who have been alerted to the end of Assyria, do not mourn your passing, but rather they clap. They rejoice. They're filled with joy. Why? Because God has removed from their side that one who had been their affliction, that one who had been their cruel and burdensome oppressor. All who hear the news about you clap their hands over you, for upon whom has not come your unceasing evil. We come to the end of God's address to Nineveh. And Babylon will soon sweep in and put an end to this once great nation. And next week, Lord willing, when we come back again, we move into the book of Habakkuk. And just a few short years will have passed from this prophecy of Nahum and the destruction of Assyria. And a new threat arises, a new challenge. And that new threat and challenge raises questions in the mind of God's prophet. Why? Why, O God? Why does evil happen? So come back again next week as we're going to move into Habakkuk. And we're going to begin to contend with the questions raised by the prophet in that short book.